This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
Let's start with that.
Don't play with that. You're going to knock it all over the table. See? That's
no
how
table.
He listens.
No table tapping.
I didn't tap.
My hands, I've been sitting on my hands.
See where my hands are? I didn't tap.
I was worried about
I see where your hands are, John.
They're under my legs.
Oh, okay,
cold.
Never mind. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Are good actors made or born? Dun, dun, dun. That's an interesting topic, and I think that it's I think it is maybe a combination of the two. But if you are already born to be an actor,
an actor,
you can become a better actor through
male or female.
That's right. But you can become a better actor,
actor
by being. By following some rules and you know, there are some things you can do to become better and better, even in community theater. And by the way, why do we stop saying actress? I've always wondered about
that. I don't know, but
it kind of bothers
actor,
me.
Actor applies to both.
I know it does, and they just, it's like it happened suddenly, and I thought, where was I?
Oh, well, you know? they've used it, but
did you miss the what is that, the revolution, the women's rights movement?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's been, I think it was since that. Period started.
Well, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's, you can say whichever you want. It's mm-hmm. not prohibitive to say actress. You can do that.
Oh, you
can?
But
it's just, yeah, sure. But it's just easier to say actor,
mm-hmm.
actor, whatever.
I guess I just kind of like
making well,
the distinction
okay,
for some
David,
reason. I don't
you
know
say
why.
Whatever you like.
Yeah.
So I'm not adverse to having you say actress today if you'd like.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So, now back to the topic at hand, if you can remember it.
Are actors made or born?
Very good.
All right.
What are you? Oh, everybody looks at me.
Well, I thought you were had your mouth open. You were going to say
I was going to say Marcia.
his mouth open waiting for a
well,
fish.
Well, I mean, I think honestly, yeah, I think most actors are born. I think you can make a better – I think you can make a poor actor better.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. And to the point where you may not even know that they're the weakest actor in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I do think that there are certain people with an innate ability to create character.
Right. And but really have an interest in it. I run into this because I teach college courses and I find that there are people who just it is like pulling teeth to get them to come out of that shell a little bit because they really just don't want to.
Well, and if they don't want to, you should just leave them alone and not make them do it.
But yeah,
but they'll be happier if they do.
No, they won't. Yeah.
No, I guess
it's for their own good.
Oh, now we're looking at nature nurture, though.
Yes, yeah,
because you might be able to nurture from a very young age an artistic mm-hmm. person.
Yeah,
right.
You should be able to.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they aren't necessarily born, but maybe it's the experiences they have in the first 3 or 4 years of their life.
Well, that's true. But then you get to a certain point where all the technique in the world is not going to get past that fourth wall to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a something about that. Well, this is being really corny. Yeah, they call it star quality, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you can spot it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, when you go to see maybe a really crummy amateur production of something, but there will be someone on that stage that you cannot stop watching.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's, to me, that's star quality. And if that person so desires to pursue it and go on with it, they probably have the best shot of mm-hmm. any on the stage of making it a career in the theater.
Right. Yeah.
Which is not any place I would wish anybody to go for a career because it's killer.
I don't know how many times I've said to kids, if you want to be an actor, I that's great, but you better make sure that you're ready to not make any money and to starve, 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 and to
be rejected.
Be rejected
every day.
Have to have quite a personality. But it's not the kind of career that most parents would want for their children.
No, it's difficult.
But on the reverse side, I would say if that's what the child wants more than anything, then I think the parents should support them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sometimes literally.
Right. In your case, Deirdre was just, she just wanted it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was after she got over
wanting to be a veterinarian.
Oh, okay.
That was like
it's
she
the
was
same
six
thing,
or seven.
By the way.
Is it really?
Yeah, very close.
An acting singing veterinarian.
Singing veterinarians, that's right. No, it's really, you can kind of tell. But she's had to work very, very hard. And she's also had to sit back and say, and accept a lot of rejection.
Absolutely.
And I think you have to make sure that you realize that it's not personal. And that's where I think, even in community theater, you get people who just take everything personally. And I think that that's one of the things to be a better actor. You better not.
Don't you think, however, in community theater, there's more of a chance that rejection has something to do with personality or personal than it does in a completely objective professional setting?
Well, okay, when I say
if you don't know anybody and you just pick the best one you think, that's good. But if you know that your cousin is coming to audition and that your aunt really would like them to get in, maybe you feel a little more favorably toward that person than somebody else. I mean, not saying that it happens a lot, but it could happen.
Yes, it does happen. And you do have people who are, there's favoritism in community theater. I don't know that there's not in professional, although there's a lot of money involved, which sort of tends to work against that.
Exactly.
I
agree with John now here, and I think most community theaters, if they haven't had it, they're starting to have acting programs for starting with young ages, and in age increments, they go up to scene work and improv and building a character. And this is stuff that if you really want to do it, you can learn, and it will make you probably, hopefully, better when you get on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to express it. You have to, there's a certain something that people have, the people that really, take hold of it and make a really good career out of it.
They just absorb it a whole lot better, and they also are able to push it back out there. But going back to we talk about youth and being a training ground for young people who want it and do have that capability to get better. We also nurture a lot of full grown adults. As well. And I think
that
it's interesting to me, very often, I'll direct a small show and I tend not to direct musicals, but you get people who you think are, they aren't great, but they have enough potential that you can put them in some role. And very often I've been lucky with that. And you find that here's someone who suddenly is able, who comes a long way. Mm-hmm. Even as an adult.
Right. So I guess the question then is what can we do, or what can an actor do, even if they don't have the spark that we were talking about?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What can an actor do during rehearsals, during performances, to make themselves a better actor and continue to become better actors as they move through the, from one show to the next?
Yeah, because the reason I was talking about kids is because we offer, most theaters offer classes.
Right.
But it's for ages up through high school. Then
sure.
When you get out of high school
and
you come back, there is one group around here that I just got an email today. They are having acting classes for people age 55 and older.
Wow.
And if you want to get, if you've been active and then haven't been for a long time and are feeling maybe a little nervous about it, then that's a place. But that's the first thing I've seen like that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I agree with John. The only thing that you can do as an adult is go to auditions. Hopefully you'll get cast. If you do, pay attention to the director, whom you have to assume knows more than you do, although sometimes maybe not, but you can assume it anyway. And if you're giving notes about your character, write it down. Remember it. They're not telling you this just to hear themselves talk.
Right,
It's to make the whole show better.
I think that if you hit on the two things, just listen and yeah. and write it down.
Yeah.
Because you're old and you're not going to remember. No, I'm just if you're in.
You know, no.
But older, I mean, older, you know, adults, you know, they don't necessarily soak it up and remember every word kids tend to.
No kidding.
And so, you know, write it down for God's sakes. You know, write your blocking down. Right. I mean, but listening is the big key.
Well, and there's a reason why we ask people to bring a number two pencil to rehearsals. It's not just to write their blocking down. It's to write down questions that they might have as they're going through the rehearsal process. It's about writing down the responses that the director has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost every script has at least one or two blank pages, either at the beginning or at the end. Or if not, then carry a notebook with you. But don't be afraid to write down what the director is asking. But often, I often find that that actors will kind of zone out when they're not being addressed directly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many times I have to stop and say, you know, this may not be directed at you, but I need for you to listen to this because, to be perfectly honest, you're doing it here. You know, so now I'm going to have to give you that note here, but if you were listening to it, you could have applied it here.
Right.
And so, every once in a while, you're going to hear something that's not even related to you that you might go, oh, I need to remember that. Or, I had forgotten that I was supposed to do those things, you know?
Right. Well, and I mean, and just from the standpoint of learning, even if you aren't, you know, you don't fall under the category of whatever note the director is giving, you know, that may be something you can file away and say, oh, okay, so that's something that could be a problem. So, you know, you might remember it for future reference. I mean, that makes you a better performer and a better actor just because you paid attention.
So we know that making a good actor, just for you to be a good actor, you need to listen and listen well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And
you need to come out for auditions. And don't take it badly if the first couple of times you come out, maybe you're not cast. Come and maybe work backstage and watch the rehearsal process and watch what these people do that do get cast.
Right.
I don't know if you guys cast from cold readings, or do you do monologues? Sometimes different places do different things.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
But, and I think cold readings are hard, difficult.
They're hard, but interestingly enough, if you can come out and get a hold of the script ahead of time and read it so you have an idea, and our theater makes that available, or if you can get a hold of a copy, and most community theaters are not doing first-run shows, so the scripts are online from Amazon or your favorite bookseller, and you can get them to read ahead of time some way that's usually going to be possible. It does help you out a lot. I think, you know, as a director, I mean, cold readings are tough for the directors too. A lot of times, you know, a cold reading is good because everybody's kind of on the same level. If nobody knows it, then you have sort of a feeling of, okay, who's going to be adaptable? And so there are some good to cold readings, and that's what we tend to do.
Well, and that's why once you've started the narrowing down process, you can tell your actor or actress, okay, fine, but now can you give me a little more of this, or will you try that? And you can see right there how adaptable they are. Before you get into it.
A lot of casting does get done based on what we already know people have done in the past or can do. So,
for a brand new person,
right? Yeah, if they've never done anything, then it's different. But you do have to put your best foot forward.
Well, so what makes a good actor? Another thing is preparation.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, preparation absolutely. For the whole process, not just for being on stage once you have the role, but preparing prior to the audition process.
Yes,
even.
And being flexible, because you may have an idea about a character that may be totally in opposition of what the director's idea is.
Right.
And you can't say one is right and the other one is right, and then they're going to fight about it. You have to come to some kind of a compromise, a meeting of the minds. How does this fit into the entire framework of the play? You know? But you should have some idea, I would think. You can't just stumble in cold and say, okay, I'm going to play it this way because I want to, not because I've really thought about it.
Or because I played it this way in another play and everybody loved it. So.
When I was in high school, they just loved this.
Your mom always loves
doesn't
you.
Doesn't do that. Yeah.
Well, the thing is to listen, you know, take it. Also, I think kind of kind of think of the big picture. I mean, it's the old Shakespeare line of the play's the thing, but the play, it isn't about you. It isn't about the other people in the cast. It's about a whole work that has to come across well. And that's what the director is trying to see. Right. And as an actor, it's helpful if you kind of try to see it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I also like to work with actors who like to experiment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying to the point where, and we've talked about this in the past, where it gets out of control.
Right.
But who might have an idea for something and either bring that to me or bring it to the other actor to and say, hey, why don't we do this tonight and see what John thinks? But if they don't ever try to give me anything new, then sometimes it's like, okay. So either I have to try and pull it out of them or try to pull something new out. But I like it to be a little bit collaborative.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that, you know, and I don't mind if an actor decides to surprise me with something during the rehearsal process once or twice. I mean, that's not a big deal to me. I mean, and I may come back and say, don't ever do that again, but. You know, at least they know that they've tried it. And I don't try. I mean, and I try to say, don't ever do that again in a way that says, but fine, feel free to try something else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not personal.
See, I think in a community theater, there's very little time to experiment, mm-hmm. you know, unless mm-hmm. you're doing it during a rehearsal. And that's all well and good. But it's still time is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not rehearsing 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, which a professional show does.
Right.
So you kind of have to maybe first work with everybody as you're starting to flesh out who the characters are and how they interrelate and how they react to each other and kind of go from there to build up your own character, mm-hmm. you know, if you mm-hmm. come in with your own fully formed, it's kind of hard for other people. They kind of crash into you if they're trying to develop something on their own.
Right.
Right. Because until you actually build the relationships between the characters, you may find that if you have a solid character that you've developed outside of the rehearsal process, that it may just not fit in.
Absolutely.
So. And you're talking about the time limitation is get off book as fast as you possibly can.
Oh, Lord, yes.
And we fight this all the time in community theaters where you say, you know, everybody's going to be off book at a certain time. And then there's two or three and sometimes key individuals who are not off book. And yes, in community theaters, we all have other jobs and other things. But boy, getting off book makes the rest of that rehearsal so much more productive.
But you have to remember that whether you're off book after 1 week or dragging your feet and it's 3 or 4 weeks, the first time that you get on that stage off book, you're hardly going to remember a line. You're going to call for a line every 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get past that. And once you've done that, then it starts to come together.
I sometimes haven't been in a show for what, a year or so, I guess. But my technique very often is I get to the point where I feel like, okay, I pretty much know the script okay, but I know it's not going to be any good, but I'll put the script down. And just you're forcing yourself to try to remember. Otherwise, your brain keeps saying, well, I can always look at the book again. I mean, it's just, I just think that that's, you know.
Yeah, but I do, I mean, I appreciate an actor, and I think it makes a stronger actor, an actor who, once they're off book, keeps picking up the book.
Uh-huh.
Not just
that's true.
To keep going over their lines and make sure that their lines are accurate.
Yeah.
But to, because the more you delve through your script, the more nuances you'll find in character.
Sure.
Or you may find, oh my gosh, I didn't think that about the fact that this line is relating to this line here. You maybe it just didn't occur to you, and you might not get it if you didn't go back into the script and continue to, to delve into the script.
Yeah, off book doesn't mean forget the book.
Right.
It means just, you know, it means go back to it. It also doesn't mean, I think I may have mentioned this in a previous one, it doesn't mean go to, I saw an actor, I never did it in one of my shows, well maybe he did, went from the book and basically rewrote much of the book onto index cards.
Yep.
So he got off book, but then he was on cards.
Right,
which is like,
where did he keep the cards?
He had index cards in his hands.
Yep.
And that was, and so this was somehow off book, and I thought, no, you know, off book does not mean on cards.
No, that's it's a crutch.
It's a crutch.
See, and I hear what you're saying about going back to the book, but I usually, when I'm off book and I've got my lines, I don't look at the book again.
Uh-huh.
But that's individual.
I look at it. I look at it some. I don't know that I look at. I mean, but a lot of times I hope that, you know, if I'm dropping lines, you know, somebody's going to say something.
Yeah.
But that's different. But you're right. Yeah, you may get different interpretation out of things if you look at the text again, or you can possibly.
Mm. I like actors who also are just willing to work with other people.
Oh yeah.
You know, coming into the process with a positive attitude.
Yep.
Knowing that we're all working together towards the final goal, and that it should be a pleasant time. I call the theater an adult playground. You know, it's where we come and have a good time and enjoy and just play. But if it's not fun to come because one of the actors is difficult to work with, or always directing you, and it becomes a very difficult process.
Yeah.
So always, you know, you should be open and willing to play and be enjoyable and be here because you know that we're all doing the final thing, which is we're here to have fun. Even if it's a drama, you're still here because you're here to have a good time.
Right. And that's the whole, you're touching on the whole idea of prima donnas who come in and think that they are, that the show is about them and that they are better than everyone else.
It's not even prima donnas though. They're just sometimes people who are uneducated, who maybe it's their first show.
Yeah.
They don't realize they're not supposed to be giving notes.
Well, and the worst thing is people that, it's not their first show.
Yeah.
They still do that.
But you can't necessarily always blame the actor then, because if that is happening and then the director isn't seeing it, then the director needs to take responsibility for that as well. But I still think an actor with a good attitude is better than an actor with a bad attitude.
Oh, well,
and an actor
yes.
with a bad attitude who might be excellent sometimes is not necessarily
not worth
the actor
the time.
I want to work with.
Exactly.
That's right.
An
that's
actor
the
with
truth.
A good attitude
that
is always better to
directors
the,
do decide
the end product.
They're flexible and they listen and they're willing to try anything you want them to try.
Right. And there's always that risk benefit ratio that you get with actors. You know, if an actor is too big a risk in terms of interpersonal relationships, he ain't worth the benefit that he might be.
Right.
There's a certain point at which the director says, you know, enough of this, no more of this.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing. One other thing that I kind of picked this up really from another quarter that I won't go into is the idea of rehearsing. When you rehearse at performance level.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically meaning that when you're rehearsing, don't rehearse sort of like, okay, we're just trying to get the lines out.
Unless
it's that kind of rehearsal. But
right.
try to be the character as try to take the character as far and do it as well as you possibly can, as early as you possibly can in the rehearsal process.
Okay, I think that's a good idea, but to me, if you're trying to get into a character and all of a sudden you have no idea what your lines are, then it's in, out, in, out, in, out.
Yeah.
That would drive me crazy.
Okay. But
I like to wait until, now, God knows, you're never going to get all those lines down pat. I mean, even
the first time, no.
Right. But the lines and the blocking and where you're supposed to be, if you're worried about your lines and you're worried about where am I supposed to go, how can you build any kind of a solid, sustained character? I mean, you can't
early on when you're still struggling through that kind of stuff. No.
Well,
but I mean, but when you get to the point where you really truly are off book, and we have an actress here who gets off book very early and she's the character. Whenever she's on the stage and doing it, even though it's rehearsal, even if her blocking is incorrect, she's still the character. She's at that level all the time when she's on stage. And if she forgets a line, even sometimes she stays in character to ask for the line.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So
that's one. I hear Daniel Day-Lewis made everyone call him Mr. President while they were filming Lincoln.
That's right.
You know, well, I mean, how far are you going to take it?
Yeah.
You know, but that's his process.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree. If that's the way she works, that's the way she works, and that's fine. But I think it's difficult to find somebody like that in an amateur situation.
It is, but I think the sooner you come off book, the sooner you and you've got your blocking memorized, the better it is for creating character.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I mean, this is my own personal experience, but I didn't find out until after I graduated from college that the reason why I wasn't getting leads in shows was because the director didn't feel comfortable with my performances because I wasn't creating character quickly enough for him. So he wasn't ever sure if he was actually going to get a character.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was the reason why I wasn't getting leads. Well, that and that's okay. I mean, I understand that now. So I create character much quicker than I ever used
to.
Yeah.
You know, I try and create character at the audition. You know, I don't just stand up on stage and read, and I don't think anybody should. I think they need to create a character.
No.
And under, you know, and your research and your preparation before you even arrive.
People in community theater who just stand up and read.
Yeah.
They don't give you much to go on, and that's really difficult.
Well, that's, as you said, but that's in a cold reading probably. Yeah. And some people, as you find out, have difficulty just plain reading.
Right.
Let alone putting character into it. And that's kind of sad.
Right.
But
yeah, it is.
It happens more and more, I think.
Yeah.
I say read. Read everything. Don't read just about acting, although there are a lot of great books on acting and acting techniques that you should read, and read about directing and read about other things that might interest you regarding theater.
Yeah.
Right.
But then read lots of stuff. Read history. There's always something that you can learn from a historical novel that will move into another show that you're doing.
Right.
You know, read nonfiction, whatever. Just, well, I really appreciate people that have a wide variety in their background. Right. You know,
there's a silly show that we have right now. There's a couple of lines in there that you have to know something about history. There's a crazy line about the Archduke Ferdinand in there, for example.
Yes.
There's another nutty
that's
line.
Real,
there's
funny, but you have
it's
to know.
Funny,
that,
but you have to know that.
Started the war.
But there's also a line about the Hot Mikado at the World's Fair, which I didn't understand until I think one of our cast members actually knew the history of that.
Why? Well, I know the Hot Mikado was at the World's Fair.
Yes. Right, and it was an all-black show.
Yeah.
And it was, okay, well, there's a kind of a weirdness about the lines in there. So
I don't remember what
and it was because one of the characters, we can go into this a little deeper, but one of the characters that's cast is not cast black, and it's actually called for in the script, but we didn't get someone to come out and audition. And so, but there's a line about the Hot Mikado that doesn't make a whole lot of sense within the show because of that.
I think it's
sort of funnier in some ways. Yes, it's actually weird in a kind of a funny way. One of our cast members knew that, but you're right. But history, knowing, theology in some cases, knowing, you know, knowing something about the arts beyond just the play that you're in is critical to really bringing something to a character, I think.
Okay, well, then I guess I was not making myself clear. It wasn't that you didn't know what you were reading about, but you're just plain having trouble.
I know you're talking about basic literacy.
Yes.
Yes, we do run into that. Yes, we do run into that.
And that's why I think doing a cold reading is very difficult for some people because they have difficulty just reading the words aloud, which is kind of sad.
That's right. So flexibility.
Flexibility.
Yep. Flexibility, get off book early.
Preparation.
Willingness to work with others and have fun.
Try to see a big picture.
Do you play nice with others?
Yeah. And the big one, maybe. Maybe it's the big one. Listen.
Listen.
Oh, yeah.
Listen. It's really, I can't think of probably one that is more important than that one, possibly.
Yeah, because even when you get your lines learned and you're on the stage, if you're reacting with another character, you have to listen to what they're saying.
That's right. Just in case they don't know where they're going.
I know people that are driven crazy because they work with somebody who never looks him in the eye, looks up here, looks over there, but they're trying to play scene.
I went to a performance the other night where the lead female was not looking at the actor.
Terrible.
She was acting. It's like she constantly looking up and off to the side. And I thought, well, what is up there? And
I kept
wanting
to
look up in the upper corner of the room, and I couldn't find out.
It's amazing how easily focus shifts
when
that happens.
Well, you can listen to Theater Geeks at Blueberry.com. You listen to us at the website. You listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Smart Radio. There's a whole lot of other great little old podcatchers out there. I happen to like Downcast. Really a good. It sounds like a sad name, but it's actually a very good little podcatcher for. I think it's both Android and iPhone, and that's a way for you not to miss a single episode of Theater Geeks. Please be sure to stop by our store, which is at theatergeeks.com/store, where you can buy
Lots of stuff.
Lots of stuff. Teddy bears, mugs, beer steins.
Yeah, we're promoting the mugs because they are really good.
They are nice mugs. T-shirts, shirts.
All kinds of stuff. I'm not going to say it.
There's hoodies. There's hoodies, sweatshirts, sweatpants.
Oh, you're kidding.
All that kind of stuff too. Yes, right. So it's winter time. You can buy warmer clothing this time of year. I think you can actually get a sweater for your dog, if I'm not mistaken.
Then I'd have to get a dog.
That's the problem. You're going to have to get a dog. So anyway, so listen to us there. And, oh, by the way, before this show, I think at the time that this show is about ready to actually hit or somewhere thereabouts, Deirdre is appearing in Lucky Guy with
Mr. Tom Hanks and Ms. Maura Tierney.
And where does that Maura Tierney, who many of you will remember from ER.
Yes, and she's on The Good Wife now.
She's on The Good Wife now. Okay.
It's at the Broadhurst Theater in New York City.
Right. Starts when?
Well, it opens officially April 1st.
Okay.
Previews are March 1st. And from what I understand from my friends, the tickets are much cheaper for previews.
Oh.
But hopefully it's the first Broadway show that Tom Hanks has ever done.
Wow.
So it's written by Nora Ephron, who died this past
Brilliant
year.
Brilliant writer.
Who wrote Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
And You've Got Mail and The First Wives Club and just a whole lot of really good stuff.
Yep.
So we're hoping that it will do very
well. What's her character in this?
She has two
told you much?
She's playing a reporter and she's playing an editor.
Okay. All right.
So
that's got to be a lot of fun.
Oh, I can't wait.
That's right. Well, it's got a lot of fun for you. That's right. It's a lot of work for her, but she's probably got to be enjoying it too.
She loves it. She says everyone in the cast and several people that she knew from working with them before are in the cast. There's 13 total, I think.
So opening in April
1st.
The Lucky Guy, or is it called Lucky Guy or The Lucky?
Just Lucky Guy.
Just Lucky Guy with Tom Hanks, co-starring Deirdre Lovejoy.
Not quite, but she's there.
Hey, it's an honor to be nominated.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, so look for that. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Sheldon.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.